52DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.
ABC News, I'm Gio Benitez. Following an investigation into the fatal shooting death on the set of the Rust movie set, prosecutors announced they will file criminal charges against actor and producer Alec Baldwin, along with the armorer in charge, ABC's Jason Nathanson.
Alec Baldwin and armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed will each be charged with two counts of involuntary manslaughter following the on-set death of Rust cinematographer Helena Hutchins in October of 2021. Santa Fe, New Mexico District Attorney Mary Carmack Altweis announced the charges Thursday, saying in a statement that there's sufficient evidence to file criminal charges and no one is above the law. Both charges are a fourth-degree felony, but one of them includes a firearms enhancement, which carries a possible 5-year jail sentence. And Assistant Director David Halls signed a plea agreement for the negligent use of a deadly weapon.
In a statement, Alec Baldwin's attorney says, quote, "We will fight these charges and we will win." The U.S. has now hit its $31 trillion debt ceiling. The Treasury Department says stopgap measures are now in place. This is ABC News. The Department of Justice opening a civil rights investigation into the death of 29-year-old Tyree Nichols, who died earlier this month just after a traffic stop in Memphis. ABC's Steve Osunsami.
Now the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice has launched an investigation into this arrest. Memphis police confirm this young man died just days after January 7th traffic stop, and they say they had what they call a confrontation during the traffic stop. Then they say the young man ran, and they say there was another confrontation as they were detaining him. This is when they say he started complaining of having trouble breathing.
Massive protests and nationwide strikes underway in France. Trains have grounded to a stop and schools, along with many businesses, have shut down because workers have walked off their jobs. They're striking over a pension reform plan that would raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. Authorities in Southern California are searching for British actor Julian Sands. He's been missing since Friday after going for a hike near LA. Gio Benitez, ABC News.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The embattled vice chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission says he has no plans to step down. Bob Spindell tells Channel 27 in Madison there's nothing wrong with praising Republican efforts in Milwaukee, which led to a drop in turnout among Black and Hispanic voters. The commission oversees elections in Wisconsin. Spindell was also one of the fake Trump electors. Democratic state senators yesterday called for Spindell to resign or be removed from the commission. Changes are coming to Culver's. The Wisconsin-based burger chain is trading Pepsi for Coke. A Culver's spokesperson says it will take some time to make the switch. There are 800 Culver's in 26 states. Root beer and Dr. Pepper are staying put. In sports, Marquette beat Providence last night 83-75. You're listening to Civic Media, Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We stand on the shoulders of the women who came before us.
Women who were told they were bad with money.
Women who couldn't even get a credit card without a man co-signing.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn to lead the way.
Join us at WeSaySaveIt.org,
where women of all ages and all budgets are learning how to save for retirement.
You work hard.
You make money.
Now make that money work for you.
Invest in yourself at WeSaySaveIt.org.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Left controls your right side and your right controls your left side, and they're both tied together in a neat little package by the totally awesome Corpus Callosum. Will you peel away that meninges layer? Wipe off that cerebro spine.
To As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And our next guest, I'm so excited to talk to, because I feel like sometimes for us plebeians, we're not always appreciating all of the incredible research that's being done in Wisconsin at our universities, and some like actually really groundbreaking scientific things happening that come from like UW-Madison. And so, you know, while we learned yesterday that the slow loris, which is a primate, yes, is the only primate that's poisonous, which we do not share with them, but we do share many other things with primates. And so Dr. Andre Sousa, who is the assistant professor of neuroscience at UW-Madison, joins us to talk about the new study that he was a part of that shows the difference between the brains of primates, humans, other apes, and monkeys, and found that they're small, but they're very significant. And so, welcome to the show, Dr. Sousa.
Thank you, and thank you for the invitation.
So, I found this, and I, you know, the first thing I think is so interesting is because, you know, when we think about how similar we are, like, my favorite course in college, undergrad, I'm not a doctor, was the evolution of the sexual evolution, right? And so much of that is looking at how we, as humans, do things, and often looking at what other primates do and what do we have in common and what do we have different. And that's behavior, but you're really looking at the actual brains and what we share. And so what, I guess from the very beginning, like what is the significance or the importance of studying this and what it can tell us about ourselves?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. Of course, I've been doing this for quite some time right right now, and the study we are going to talk, it's about a very specific part of the brain, but we have been studying how our brains are different from the brains of other species, because at the end these differences will dictate the differences in cognition, in behavior, in everything we do, right? Even in how we organize society. At the end, it will all come from the differences we see in our brains. And of course, our lab has a more genetics and neuroscience approach, because at the end, I'm talking about the brain, but at the end, we can trace everything towards our DNA, right? Mm-hmm. The differences need to be there. And so our lab is very interested in understanding how from our DNA, we build this brain, right? And a chimpanzee DNA will build a chimpanzee brain, and a macaque DNA will build macaque brain, of course, brain and the rest of the body. But so we are very interested to understand, since these species were evolutionarily split, these lineages, we want to understand what are the mutations that have accumulated in our DNAs that make this development of the brain so different, and then you'll get this adult brain that does so many different things. And in the sense of brain function, I do think, of course, all animals are very well adapted to the environment and can do amazing things that we cannot do. But I do think that humans have really extraordinary abilities, right, in terms of cognition, etc. I mean, we are understanding and even manipulating life itself. So that's, I would say, is very, very special. And so the one of the interesting things we found through these later years of research is a lot of the genes that give humans some of these different abilities and make these differences in development are also the genes that are affected in a lot of psychiatric and neurodevelopmental disorders. And so that makes it even more interesting because there's a really good overlap between these two sets, the set of genes that are really differentially expressed in humans compared to other species, but are also responsible for giving us some of these disorders when they are misexpressed.
And so, with, like, just to back up, so you're looking at the prefrontal cortex, which I, in only learning about the study, I didn't realize that basically no other species besides us and other primates even have this part of the brain.
Yeah, so this prefrontal cortex is actually a very large region. The particular area we are focusing, it's called dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, and it's very simple. It's just because it's up, dorsal, and lateral.
Okay.
So it's just, it's basically a map, right? It's dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, right around there. That particular area only exists in primates, and it's very interesting because it's involved in a lot of high cognitive function things, such as working memory, motivation, etc. So it's a particular interest, of course.
So with the working, I was reading this, the working memory. So does that mean my dog does not have a very good memory?
That particular area? No, actually.
And so I guess. And it was interesting because if you're looking at if part of this is going to help inform different developmental cognition, either autism or some of the other things, is that, do we see in other primates those kind of developmental disparities, I guess, for lack of a better word, because I can't think of it, of like,
yeah,
do like, because we're closest to chimps, right? More so than apes, right?
Than the other apes, yeah.
Yes.
Chimpanzees are also closer to us because people always think about things as humans. So when we say humans are closer to chimpanzees, it means that chimpanzees are also closer to human mm-hmm. than they are to any other great apes, right?
Yeah. And so with that, is that a divide of like autism or different other learning disabilities as we understand them in humans? Do those show up in primates, or is that something specific in what you're trying to figure out?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, of course, because most of the psychiatric disorders, if not all, are described as basically as almost as human specific because they affect specific features of the human brain and how we interact with society. That being said, even when we and other scientists, you know, make a mouse with the same mutations as humans, the mice also change their behavior. Meaning that giving us some hints that probably there are natural occurring mutations in these other primates, and they probably develop some of these disorders. But fortunately for us, unfortunately for the other species, humans are, as opposed to what most people say, are a very caring species, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we care about the members of our species when they develop disorders, where most of the species, if you develop a disorder, you are usually going to die. And so, right? And so, in that sense, it's very hard to know if these mutations are occurring naturally or not. But probably they do, but they will affect each brain differently. For example, a lot of these disorders might affect language, for example, and which is very specific to human, right?
Yeah.
Verbal language. They might affect the way we interact with society, but again, human societies are way more complex than society organization of the other primates. So there's lots of things at play. So I think those mutations occur. They don't affect the other animals the same way they affect humans. So genetically, they are similar disease. In terms of the outcomes, they probably have differences. And so when we talk about autism spectrum disorder, we associate with humans because we associate the disorder as it affects humans, not the other species.
We're talking to Dr. Andre Sousa, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Neuroscience at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the study. Is it ongoing or is it completed?
So this one was completed, but now we are extending to other parts of the brain and also at other developmental periods, because this was all done in adults. Yeah.
Oh, so you're going to do this potentially looking at children now?
It's very hard, right? Because all of these species have almost the same protection, and we can only use the brains when an animal or person dies,
yeah,
and we can then collect the brain. You cannot do experiments in chimpanzees or humans, so we need to wait to collect those brains. But we were able to collect some, and we are extending to other developmental periods to see in different developmental periods how different cell types in the brain are affected, basically, through these mutations, and also what are the genes that are expressing that, again, builds a different brain. So that's the ultimate goal, because when you look at the adult, it's a finished product, right? Mm-hmm. We really want to understand how the thing is assembled.
Well, it's almost this idea, and I've read some things that, this is a little bit off topic, but maybe you can talk to it because you are a neuroscientist, but this kind of myth around your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25. And I don't know if that's...
It's not a myth. Is that true? Yeah. So our brain, of course, begins to, it's developing very early, prenatally, and then continues to generate all the cells you need to have. The cells usually are not born in the place where they end up. They need to migrate, form all the connections that form the brain circuits that control basically everything you do, consciously and unconsciously, right? But then the last processes to be developed are myelination. It's when you wrap the axons of the neurons for better conducting the electrical impulse, and then also synaptic refinement. So the way the neurons connect to each other is always changing and refining. And these processes of myelination in humans, in the prefrontal cortex specifically, do end up in your late 20s, and even 30s sometimes. So it's actually correct.
So it is correct. So then is there a... other bookend of when we're basically like fully baked and probably not going to change?
So the brain is always changing,
okay,
right?
Okay.
So especially this part I was telling about synaptic refinement. And of course, it changes a lot with the environment and with the input. And, you know, for example, diseases such as addiction are always changing your brain, right? And especially the way these circuits operate. So it's a always ongoing process. And then at some point, of course, you have also neurodegeneration, which also changes your brain later in life. So,
well, just quickly, just to get back on topic with the study. So as far as what did you learn from the first study that is leading you into the next one?
So one of the most interesting things was this cell type that we found only in humans that is able to produce dopamine. And dopamine is a neurotransmitter, so a substance that is released from one neuron to another one that allows cells to communicate with each other. And it has very important functions and roles in motor planning, cognitive functions, and addiction. And we found one cell type in the human brain that is able to produce dopamine, and the same cell when you look in the brains of other species, seems that is not able to produce dopamine. So we are now following this to try to understand what is this cell doing in our brains.
That's so, as someone who has ADHD and who has understood my ADHD to be just constantly following the dopamine, that is very interesting. And so, Dr. Andre Sousa, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This is fascinating stuff. And so good luck on the next study, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Thank you. Thank you again for the invitation. It was my pleasure to talk
to
you.
Have a great day. All right, stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Each other. Well, to answer that question, I'm going to have to break it down to a microscopic level. This is a neuron, a funky, funky neuron. You got your axon on the one side. You got your dendrites on the other. See the dendrites and see the signal from another neuron, which starts a chemical reaction in the nucleus, creating a nerve impulse which travels down a long, long, mile-encoded strand. Women.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Phones? Social media? You've kept up with the times. If you can do that, you can definitely save for retirement. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in just 3 minutes, you'll get free tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy this afternoon with mixed precipitation likely, changing all snow. High of 34. North winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast tonight. Chance for snow showers. Lows dip down to about 24. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 28. About an inch of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 34.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matinere is on the board. How much fun did you find? What did you have to search to find that song for Dr. Seuss?
I searched brain songs.
Just brain songs.
Yes.
What else? Any other interesting ones that you found?
Nothing quite as good as that one.
Yeah. It's funny. It reminds me of the mnemonic devices. You have to, like, instead of a mnemonic device, there's a song to, like, remember the different parts of the brain.
Yes.
And it's been a while, but the most heavy memorization, like, anatomy course I ever had to take in college was a physical anthropology class, and it was hard. It was probably the hardest class that I've ever had to take, but mostly because I was not a science major.
Sure.
And so the amount of actual memorization, but also because what we got tested on was being able to look at the different skulls of hominids. So, like, as human evolution and how the brain changed, and be able to look at the very distinctive features of that skull to then name which kind of hominid it was. And, like, same thing with pelvis. We had to be able to look at a pelvis and try to understand if it was more likely to be a male or a female at all. And just, like, all the anatomy stuff. And certainly there was a lot of things to help me memorize.
Remember.
I didn't have any sweet songs like that. But she is. I just remember. I've never worked harder in class than that one.
That's too bad. If I had been there, I'm sure I could have helped you find a pelvis song, because I'm sure there's one out
exactly.
there somewhere.
I'm sure my mom has a lot of these. She always loves to say that she got an A in her anatomy class, which, like, most people in that did not do.
Right.
And so she was a very good student.
Oh, I bet.
I get my work ethic from her, I think. But speaking of animal studies, I found this one and I thought you would really appreciate this as a dog lover.
Oh, yeah.
So this is what it means when your dog puts their paw on you. You know, when they just put their little paw on your chest?
I always thought it was pet me.
I think it's that. So it's common knowledge that dogs wag their tails when they're happy and tuck them in when they're anxious. Some body language, though, is a little less clear. And I've also heard that wagging their tail can also be when they're nervous and not just when they're happy. But
okay.
That's a different topic. But, like, have you ever wondered what it really means when they put their paw on you? And it turns out it could be a sign of affection that translates into the three words we always would love our pets to say to us: I love you.
Oh, I love that.
So Rebecca Forrest, who is an assistant dog trainer at the dog clinic, wrote about how your dog's paw could be a sign of thanks for the petting that they've already received and want to show you that the loving feeling is mutual. And so she's quoted as saying, studies have shown feel-good hormones such as oxytocin, not dopamine, but oxytocin, are released by both human and dog during a petting session. So by putting his paw on you whilst you are stroking him, he is further extending contact and reciprocating affection back.
I completely believe that.
I mean, you can't tell me otherwise anymore. I won't believe anything else but that. And so in another setting, it's possible that the paw could mean something else. The key is to look for hints in their body language to give you hints as to what their paw touch might mean. So, for example, if your dog is lip smacking, yawning, or displaying flat ears, the paw could indicate that they're anxious and are looking for some comforting.
Yeah, I've always heard that the yawning indicates that they're anxious.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. It's not the relaxed yawn where they just wake up from a nap. It's more that squeaky kind of yawn.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, big yawn. And you think it's a cute thing, but if it means that they're actually anxious.
Well, and his ears are flat.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to keep it. I mean, Cliff is a chihuahua, so let's be honest.
He's a pretty happy guy, isn't he?
No, he's pretty anxious. He's like a grumpy old man. He's like 12 years old, and the amount of side eye this dog gives us a lot of the time. And he does love, he's a snuggle bug too, but the amount of pictures I have of him in my phone just kind of like looking at me from the side of his eye, being like, what do you want? Where's my dad? But the yawning is interesting. And so, I don't know, I just thought that was... I feel like that's so hard to study animals and to be like the behavior part of it. And how do you, especially as we were just talking about, you know, the certain parts of our brains that we share with primates that are the things that make primates closer to us. But when you talk about dogs, you want them, you're like, I wonder what they're thinking right now.
Yeah.
And it's probably not much.
It's, I'm hungry. Where's the food? Why haven't you fed me yet? Where's the food? Where's my ball? Where's the food?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think they're kind of simple creatures.
Do you think there's any chance you guys would get another dog?
You know, and I think about it all the time.
Yeah, I bet.
But we're both working full time now.
Yeah.
And if it were, no, just it's just not convenient right now. And two, having to put Barkley down was so painful that I just don't know that I want to go through that again because they don't live long enough.
I mean, you hope that's the one thing about getting a little one. You're like, maybe you'll live to 20. Probably not, but.
Well, but then maybe. I mean, my first dog, Pierce, was almost 18. But what is his quality of life? I kept him alive longer than I should have because I was selfish, because I wanted him to be there for me.
Yeah, and that's probably a different topic for a different day as like the responsible thing. As far as your dog gets older, like how much money do you spend on to keep them alive?
And what is quality of life?
And quality of life being? Because every once in a while we look at Cliff, it's like, how much would we be willing to spend? Because it's not like he was too old to get like doggy insurance, right? Because God, we love that animal so much.
They just take over your heart. They really do, which is good.
Which is good.
And I think most people treat them that way. You know, that they're part of the family. They're a really important part of the family.
Yeah. Well, so take that. If you are a dog owner, choose to believe that this is true. That when they put their little paw on your chest,
they're saying,
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Yes.
All right. Well, when we come back, today on this day in history, Milwaukee schools were ordered to desegregate. But how are we doing multiple decades later? We're going to talk about that when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hometown Radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Gio Benitez. Following an investigation into the fatal shooting death on the set of the Rust movie set, prosecutors announced they will file criminal charges against actor and producer Alec Baldwin, along with the armorer in charge, ABC's Jason Nathanson.
Alec Baldwin and armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed will each be charged with two counts of involuntary manslaughter following the on-set death of Rust cinematographer Helena Hutchins in October of 2021. Santa Fe, New Mexico District Attorney Mary Carmack Altweis announced the charges Thursday, saying in a statement that there's sufficient evidence to file criminal charges and no one is above the law. Both charges are a fourth-degree felony, but one of them includes a firearms enhancement, which carries a possible five-year jail sentence. And Assistant Director David Halls signed a plea agreement for the negligent use of a deadly weapon.
In a statement, Alec Baldwin's attorney says, quote, "We will fight these charges and we will win." The U.S. has now hit its $31 trillion debt ceiling. The Treasury Department says stopgap measures are now in place. This is ABC News.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The embattled vice chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission says he has no plans to step down. Bob Spindell tells Channel 27 in Madison there's nothing wrong with praising Republican efforts in Milwaukee, which led to a drop in turnout among Black and Hispanic voters. The commission oversees elections in Wisconsin. Spindell was also one of the fake Trump electors. Democratic state senators yesterday called for Spindell to resign or be removed from the commission. Changes are coming to Culver's. The Wisconsin-based burger chain is trading Pepsi for Coke. A Culver's spokesperson says it will take some time to make the switch. There are 800 Culver's in 26 states. Root beer and Dr. Pepper are staying put. In sports, Marquette beat Providence last night 83-75. You're listening to Civic Media, Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Suddenly, my quarterback is the number one trending topic. Why, you might ask, is Aaron Rodgers trending on Twitter? He's out this game. He's got COVID-19. And to my perception, he freaking lied to us, man. I'm very frustrated that he is not eligible to play this Sunday, especially when you find out your quarterback is a half a Trumpster. And he claims, I'm not a flat earther. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just play one in the NFL. That pisses me off, man. I was going to bet on that team. Maybe. New time, 3 to 6 p.m. And Dom.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Joe, what do you got for us today?
In reference to Lindsey Graham, I was amazed at his comments where he said, if Trump is indicted, there will be riots in the streets. Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer, and in order to be a JAG officer, you have to pass the bar. Was a JAG
officer. I'm sorry, he's a JAG officer? I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, to see a lawyer head for the rat hole instead of acting like a person with a backbone. Wow, what a profile and courage, huh?
Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
You let him try violin because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We got Jane Metnair on the board. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network, thank you for tuning in during your lunch hour. A quick reminder that if you missed any part of today's show, or I think we're still in the show, so if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. And as always, you can join the conversation, 844-967-2789. So one of the things I typically try to keep an eye out for as we as we prep for each week of shows, is checking out one of my favorite things in Wisconsin, which is the Wisconsin Historical Society.
It's a wonderful organization.
God, they just do. That was one of my Christmas gifts, actually, from my mom, was getting the Wisconsin Historical Society magazine.
Oh, really?
I haven't had the time to flip through it yet, but she got one for herself, too. And she goes, oh, my God, there's so many interesting stories in here.
Cool.
And so, but they do the magazine. They have a website. They own so many different properties, including Old World Wisconsin, which we've obviously talked about a lot on this show. They have the museum in Madison. But the team over there is great. And so, but one of the things they have on the website is On This Day in History. And sometimes it feels like this does not seem very important to put on there, but then sometimes it's very important. And so on this day, January 19th, 1976, federal district judge John Reynolds ruled that the Milwaukee Public Schools were illegally segregated in violation of the 14th Amendment, rights of the students, and ordered the Milwaukee School Board directors to take immediate steps to desegregate the public schools. And, you know, but that, and so like they were still segregated even a long time after Brown versus Board of Education.
In 1976.
Yeah. And so as I was looking up, trying to get more information on this, you can go to the New York, it made it to the New York Times. And so you can still see the New York Times article where the headline was Judge Orders Milwaukee to Desegregate Schools. This was printed on January 20th, 1976. And I'll just read the first couple paragraphs. A federal judge ruled here today that Milwaukee schools were segregated and ordered immediate steps for integration. Acting on the suit filed in 1965, so it was 11 years from filing the original suit. By a group of parents of black children and white children, federal judge John W. Reynolds said the segregation had been intentionally created and maintained by the Milwaukee School Board. Judge Reynolds appointed John Granewski, a former United States Postmaster General, to oversee an integration plan that will be developed by school officials. Mr. Granewski, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, was ordered to begin work immediately and file a progress report with the court by May 1st. No deadline for the integration plan was set. And so what I understood, and if I get this wrong, please feel free to let me know more of the details, especially because this was not that long ago. So certainly there's enough people who live in this area who probably remember this firsthand. So 844-967-2789 was that they had followed the rules for integration enough in that they were busing some kids, but then once they were in school, they were in separate classrooms.
Oh, wow.
I think that's what I understood as far as what the
situation was.
And, you know, on one hand, it's like, oh, that wasn't that long ago. But it's also, I think the more important thing is we haven't come that far. Because last year, so this was May 17th, 2022, Rory Linnan, who is the education reporter over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this was an article she wrote. So I doubt anything has changed that much or significantly since she wrote this a little less than a year ago. But Milwaukee area schools rated highest in the U.S. for black-white segregation on the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. So very within like a 0.3 radius, Chicago, Newark, and Detroit were also basically as bad when it came to, and this is obviously not forced segregation because of you are not allowed to go to this
right.
school. It is much more because of white flight, of historical redlining, the covenants we learned about this week, and just where kids go to school, but that Milwaukee, at least as of last year, was the worst when it came to segregation in the country, in schools, which is not great.
No, it's not great. Disheartening.
And, you know, and it's because it's so interesting because I, as someone who doesn't have kids yet, like, it's one, I feel like the topic of schools in theory, you can have your ideas of how things should get fixed. But then when it comes to your kid, your decisions are much more about what's best for your individual kid, even if that contributes to the systemic issue being, well, MPS is not my problem, so I'm moving to TOSA, where the school, the public schools are better. Or I'm moving to Shorewood, or I'm moving even further
out
west in Wisconsin, or private schools. And it's hard, again, as someone who doesn't have kids, it's hard to blame parents when it's like, why is the dysfunction or the perceived dysfunction, I don't want to deal with it. And why do I have to be the one, you know, it's like one of those things. It's like, where do you, in theory, because I think there's, I found this other study that in theory, most, like a gross majority, a huge majority of parents believe in racially integrated schools. But when it comes to like actually the things that would have to happen to have racially integrated schools, and when it comes to their kid, it's not as likely, which is why, you know, you get kind of these like lefty liberal people sometimes who talk one way, but when it comes, the rubber hits the road, it's not the decisions that they're making.
And I want this fixed, but I don't want my child's future to be the one that.
And I think personally, like Mike and I talk about this, because like I don't necessarily want to leave Milwaukee, and I don't, as a right, as far as I can tell, I don't want to send my kids to a private school that lacks diversity. And diversity in a lot, that can that mean a lot of different ways, not just racial diversity, religious diversity. Because like I was in the situation where I at first was going to a private school, private elementary, well, private 1 through 8 school, 8 school in Madison, Queen of Peace. Because, you know, that's where my parents went to Catholic school. So they sent my brother and I to Catholic school. But, you know, this is the fun story that my brother always harps on, is like, I got a lot more. He was the oldest. So
sure.
There was a lot more stricter rules for him versus I got a little more.
You got away with more.
Leniency.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was in 5th grade, because you can imagine, private school in Madison, almost everyone was white. There was 50 kids per grade. And I was a tall, loud tomboy who both liked sports and theater. And I just didn't really feel like I was making many friends or fit in this small group of kids. And so I somehow convinced my parents to let me transfer and go to the public middle school by 6th grade. And so then I ended up going to Cherokee. And then I ended up going to Madison West, which was a public school. But like the trajectory that I was supposed to be on was Queen of Peace to Edgewood.
Sure.
Which is the private high school. And I, to this day, consider my exposure to other types of people to be a core, like, fundamental reason I am who I am, right? As far as, like, my empathy for other people, my understanding of, like, at least being open, like, being open-minded. And, like, I think you can't discount how, the long-term benefits of exposing your kids to other kinds of people just in the name of the best academic surrounding, like school, because you're just like kind of building in a potential for them to be ignorant of other people's experiences.
Well, on the one
hand, there's an education in and of itself by going to school with people who are not like you.
There's no question. But I also think for some, they could, because you had a positive experience when you switched to a public middle school.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as positive. I did get kicked out of my group of girlfriends when I was in 6th grade. So that wasn't that. But even that, we turned into a positive.
I think for some kids who are then in that situation who do not have a positive experience, that can give them a far different look at the world and not be as compassionate and not, again, depending
but
upon the individual.
But does that happen very often?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, in a lot, and granted, some of these studies might have bias baked into them, but there is a lot of literature on the benefits, both socioeconomically and of socioeconomically and racially integrated schools, that includes everything from like academic and cognitive benefits to civic and social emotional benefits to economic benefits. And so like across the board, there's a lot of data out there that show that it's like on the whole good for everyone, but it's just the obstacles in place to do it are harder. So like I know less of the stories you're talking about of people like, well, this was a mistake because they had a bad experience. Sometimes the schools are not as good when you look at test scores and everything like that. But like I know less that like, because like I know people who went to some private schools who had a horrendous, like socially.
Oh, and the bullying?
I'm just gonna say it, like the university high school. Like I have some friends, or university school or whatever. Like I have some friends who went there who was like, it was horrendous.
A nightmare, I'm sure.
Of the way that kids treated each other. And I don't know. Like I did, like that's obviously anecdotal, but I'm not convinced that this idea of the sending your kid to the best school, and I don't have kids. So if you have very strong feelings on this, I am open ears, but I just think, you know, on this anniversary of very intentional segregation that was happening not that many decades ago, we've still found a way to not make that much progress. I think at the cost of a lot of kids.
I'm just shocked. I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I have no memory of, I mean, again, I lived in a small town an hour away, but.
So there wasn't a lot of racial integration?
There was none. Crawford. Again, I've told you this before. My father buried the Catholics and the other funeral home in town buried the Lutherans. That was the extent of our racial diversity in Hartford.
Isn't that interesting? What do you think Hartford looks like today?
Pretty much the same.
Is it pretty much the same?
Yeah.
Because I would say Wisconsin Rapids, my mom has said, it's very different now than it was when she was growing up.
Yeah.
Not very different, but certainly there's more diversity now than there was in her when she was at that time. And so, you know, I would love to, if you have thoughts on this, 844-967-2789, on this distinction between theoretically understanding the benefit of socioeconomically and racially integrated schools, but like the, how gun shy people are when it comes to actually having your kid be part of making that decision. Cause I don't want to judge anyone. And it's like, your kid. And like, there's no one you're going to try to like, you want the best for them no matter what. Potentially the cost of chipping away at this problem. So, again, 844-967-2789 if you have thoughts on this. We'll keep the conversation going. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay tuned.
I'm Danica Patrick and proud aunt. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing. But not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. One in six. That little girl sitting alone at the playground, she can't play like the other kids. She doesn't have the energy because she's hungry. School lunch will be her only meal today. It breaks my heart that this is the reality in our country, but it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. This food is then provided to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about using your imagination, learning, and having fun. These children shouldn't have to miss out on simply being a kid because they're hungry. To find out how you can help end childhood hunger in your community, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy this afternoon with a chance of snow. Highs level off around 34. North winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of snow showers again tonight. Lows dip down to about 24. Overcast. Highs around 28 tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected. About an inch of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 34.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
To memorize your lies, I feel like I've been hypnotized. And then that magic man, he come to town.
Woo-wee. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Jane Matner is on the board. We are talking about, on this day in history, Milwaukee schools were ordered to desegregate because even though Brown versus Board of Education had been precedent for a while, there was still some intentional segregation happening within Milwaukee schools.
And the court case took 11 years.
So we talked about that, but then we kind of also pivoted to the fact that Milwaukee is still, according to this one study, it was like the most segregated school district in the country, with Chicago, Newark, and Detroit not being far behind. And kind of opening it up to a discussion on how much personal responsibility any parents have who believe in integration, but also want to send their kids to good schools. And so we opened up the phone lines and we have a caller. Hello, Brian.
Hey. Hey. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm full of magic and wonder. I'm on my way into the studio myself.
So you have a story similar that falls under this topic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to three different high schools growing up, and I went to high school over a period of 5 years. My freshman year, I went to Bishop Girton High School in Nashua, New Hampshire. That's the private, up until that year, was the all-boys high school that the movie and book, The Chocolate War, is based on. And it's a private school. It's not quite the prestige as Phillips Exeter, which is a, you know, academy that Separate Pieces based on another book, but it's, you still had kids from all over New England driving sometimes 40 to an hour just to get to high school, to this one school, to be taught by the brothers and all this stuff. My mom actually taught there. And it was a very socially interesting thing because you got the, you know, the half the family from the governor's family there, mm-hmm. and, you know, a bunch of people who are well-to-do, and if you're just a local kid who happens to be there as a work-study program on the weekend, it's a different thing for you. So I asked to be transferred to the local public high school in Nashua, New Hampshire, and my life got significantly better after that, socially, and I wouldn't say I'd have more opportunities. I'd say I have different opportunities there, a multitude of different opportunities.
Can you give an example and make that a little more tangible?
When I was in the public high school, was the first time I interacted with anybody from any other race.
Hmm. And do you feel like that made an impact?
In a formal way, yeah.
Do you feel like that made an impact on like how you saw the world?
Of course, because you get to see in and out and every day, like, how, oh, that's a person. Mm-hmm. Not just something I see on TV or whatever. You can cognitively say, that's another person, but unless you're there, unless you're experiencing that situation, you don't get that. You don't get a lot of different perspectives. You also don't get the diverse amount of culture and music and different things that you get from knowing people from even if you didn't hang out with them, it's there, you know?
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. So do you feel like you had that impacts where you would want to send your kids to and what kind of school you'd want to send them to?
Absolutely. I have a 10-year-old right now, and that's part of what made me choose where we chose to move when I moved up here, because I could go to any place around the Milwaukee area, and I chose Oak Creek because it seemed to be the school there that we checked out had more kids from different backgrounds than I had seen in any other area. And I liked that a lot because I also moved my senior year of high school to Michigan, and the school I went to there had kids from all over, all different socioeconomic backgrounds as well as racial backgrounds, and it was fantastic. Some of the best things I ever did, and it was the best fit for me.
I think this is so interesting. It goes certainly to what I think. Thanks so much for the call, Brian. And because I think that there is a huge benefit of being exposed to things that are outside of your firsthand family experience.
Absolutely.
And the homogenous nature of, we're the Catholics, so we're going to stay over here, and we don't talk to the Lutherans, and like all of these divisions that we arbitrarily come up with as humans because of our lizard brain and like wanting to be tribal. But ultimately, to the proximity of people who are not like you only increases understanding versus othering them and not having any access to what their life experience is. And so this whole conversation was made me think of, you don't listen to podcasts. So I feel like, of course,
I can pretend.
I already know the answer to this question. I was like, do you remember the Serial podcast?
Oh, sure. No.
So the original Serial podcast, Serial is like a series and they kind of take on a different topic for each season. But the first one, when it became super famous, was the case Anand, the one, and he just got out of jail. It was like an investigative piece and reopened this case. Anyways, without thinking about it. But they did, one of their seasons was, it's called Nice White Parents. And I cannot recommend this podcast series enough. It's a 5-part series that looks into building a better school system and what gets in the way of that system. And so it was so good. And so it came out, I think, in like 2020, maybe, I don't know how long ago it went, but this is kind of the description. And so we know American public schools do not guarantee each child an equal education. 2 decades of school reform initiatives have not changed that. But when Shauna Wolf, Goffey-Walt, a reporter, looked into inequality in education, she saw that most reforms focused on who schools were failing, Black and brown kids. But what about who schools are serving? In this 5-part series, she turns her attention to what is arguably the most powerful force in our schools, white parents. And it's really interesting because it's so much like well-intentioned people.
Sure.
And, one of the episodes, a lot of it takes place in New York, but it's the, overstep of white parents who in like a recently more integrated school and like how they start influencing their access to like foundations and getting grants and where that money filters into and who does that serve within the school. And it has a historical view, like it goes back to the 1960s and kind of the fight then for racially integrated schools in Brooklyn. And it focuses a lot in Brooklyn and New York schools, but like it's things that I think you can take away no matter what. So it's called Nice White Parents, just like our podcast. You can find it wherever you find podcasts. I can't recommend it enough. And I think it will just make you reflect a little bit as far as how you think about schools or even think about your own kids. So
you're a little different perspective.
Exactly. All right. Well, we are wrapping up this hour. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Dr. Mike is going to be here to fix your life and your lineup. Stay tuned.
Oh, you know I was on an honor roll. Got good grades and got
you for listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
Warning, listening to the devil's advocates may expose you to opposing views.
We've mentioned, inflation is going to be an issue. Let me ask you this. What would you like to see Donald Trump do if you were here? What did you suggest Biden do to address the inflationary pressures we're facing right now?
I can't tell you that because that would be something you could counter and defeat Trump with or the Republican Party. So tell you.
You think Trump's taking strategy from you on talk radio, Lou?
I mean, you're no Kid Rock, Lou.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.